Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Jaya Jaya Godadha Shivasadi.
The following is a lecture given by His Holiness Jaya Bhataka Swami on September 14, 1982 in New Orleans, Louisiana. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 8th Canto, Chapter 8, verse 22 and 23.
Chirayor nahi sila mangala. Kvachit tadapyasti na vedyam ayusha. Yatro bhayam kutra cha sopya mangala. Sumangala kaschana kaṃkṣate himam. Vachit chirayo nahi sila mangala. Vachit tadapyasti na vidyam ayusha. Yatro bhayam kutra cha sopya mangala. Sumangsha dehima.
By His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Someone may have longevity, but not have auspiciousness or good behavior. Someone may have both auspiciousness and good behavior, but the duration of his life is not fixed. Although such demigods as Lord Shiva have eternal life, they have inauspicious habits like living in crematoriums. And even if others are well qualified in all respects, they are not devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Translation with repetition. Someone may have longevity. Text 23.
Evangaving Srisyavya Vichari Sadhunai Varagani Jaika Srayataya Gunasrayam Babhre varam sarva gunair apekshitam Roma mukundangani apeksham ipsitam Evanga visri evanga vingrishya vya vichari sad gunair Varam nijaika soyataya gunasrayam Babhre varam sarva gunair apekshitam Roma mukundanga nirapekshamipshitam.
Sukadeva Goswami continued, in this way, after full deliberation, the goddess of fortune accepted Mukunda as her husband, because although he is independent and not in want of her, he possesses all transcendental qualities and mystic powers, and is therefore the most desirable. Sukadeva Goswami continued, in this way, after full deliberation, the goddess of fortune, Sukadeva Goswami continued, report by Srila Prabhupada, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mukunda, is self-sufficient. Since he is fully independent, he was not in want of the support or association of Lakshmi Devi. Nonetheless, Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune, accepted him as her husband. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purport of text 22 and 23, chapter 8, canto 8, in the manner of the Srimad Bhagavatam in the matter of churning of the milk ocean. So in continuation of our class yesterday, Lakshmi Devi has gone around to all of the demigods, all of the demons, all of the great personalities present, and decided that the only one who is fully independent, who is in the topmost position, is Lord Vishnu, Mukunda. There was a disciple of Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur from Germany who about 40, 50 years ago visited India. Prabhupada told the story. He was one of those rare, he had very expert German Sanskrit scholars. So he went around India and he studied the Sanskrit text. He looked at all the deities, trying to find out who was in the topmost position. So then, when he visited Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, might have been before his initiation, then, must have been, he was asked that what was his conclusion. So he replied that his conclusion was that Krishna must be the highest deity. So why? How you have reached that conclusion? Well, he gave so many reasons. Then in a simple way, he also just expressed that, well, when you see all the different deities, just like Kali has got the big chopper, each deity, like Shiva is meditating, each deity is doing something, meditating on someone else, or doing some kind of work, building a universe, whatever. When he saw the deity of Radha Krishna, then he saw that Krishna was simply dancing, playing on the flute. He was the only one who was enjoying. Therefore, that was the clincher, that Krishna was the topmost. His only purpose is to enjoy. In India, when you go into the government offices, you see on some of the clerk's office desk, files stacked up, 3-4 stacks, about 3-4 feet high. But when you go into the minister's office, he has a little stack, like this. And when you go into the higher officers, and the people just come in, and he just gives a little signature and they walk out, that's all. So, also in big corporations, the Lord is in his original position, simply enjoying with his devotees transcendental loving relations. For maintaining universal governments, universal or cosmic organizations, he expands himself into the Vishnu form, Narayan. Although Narayan is also the supreme, he is independent, but he voluntarily accepts to maintain everything. That's why even amongst the Vishnu forms, although they're all the same person, although uniquely each of the forms has got a particular individual personality, in spite of being the same person, it's an inconceivable situation that the Lord, in those different Vishnu forms, is maintaining the universe. So, Prabhupada also explained that you can create something. It's not so difficult. And it's even easier to destroy it. But to maintain something, that's very difficult. Just like in America, you find that many people are getting married. Doesn't seem to be so difficult. And a lot of people also are becoming divorced. It also doesn't seem to be very difficult. But staying together or maintaining the relationship on some working basis, that's much more difficult. So, in this material world, people create things and they destroy things, but maintaining, just like the United Nations always supposed to be maintaining peace, but they're never able to do it. Ultimately, nobody cares what they say when it comes down to it. So, This is the difficulty. And the universe, so therefore Krishna himself, he expanded into Vishnu, so Vishnu is maintaining things. Otherwise, how would things go on? But he does so through his energies, not that he personally has to do anything himself except to occasionally come down to bless his devotees. Sometimes he puts the demons in their place by blessing the demigods. So in any case, Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, we see that she's decided to stay with Mukunda. Actually, Prabhupada explained that she's always steady with Narayana, with Krishna. But the goddess of fortune everywhere else is known as Chanchalya or Chanchala. She's very flickering, very whimsical. People are just hoping upon hope that the goddess of fortune will always be with them so they can make a lot of money, so that they can enjoy all type of opulence. But when a person is not a devotee of the Lord, she doesn't stay any place very long. In India, they have all kind of theories. I don't know whether they're true or not. Some people think that, well, goddess of fortune can only stay in your family for 3 generations. After that, even the wealthiest person will go broke. This, that, they have all kind of speculations. But, and when the generations are getting thin, then they know, well, it's time to become a devotee of Narayan now, because we'll lose. Even the Mayavadis tell the people, yes, you should worship Narayan if you want to keep Lakshmi in your house. When Ravana captured Sita, that was the complaint. That one of his family members, Vibhishana someone, had a dream that Lakshmi had left Sri Lanka because of the offense that he did on Sita Devi. So from that time onward, everything went bad. Everything Ravana tried after that was a failure. So to keep goddess of fortune with one simply has to always keep Narayana, Krishna, present, and also not offend the pure devotees. This is the basic secret of success. America is a powerful country. America was founded on God consciousness in the beginning, at least that was the basic pilgrims. One of their principal reasons for leaving England, of course, for declaring independence, other economic and other reasons also had their part to play. But even today on the coins and in the money we see, in God we trust, which is the vestige of the original mood of depending on God. So now the Americans are still reaping the results of the pious activities of their forefathers. But it doesn't take long for pious results to run out if one is performing lots of sinful activities, hedonistic activities, which is happening more and more. Actually, when Prabhupada brought the Krishna conscious movement to America and to the West, in the future people will see that that was the beginning of their greatest good fortune. Already some scholars of Indology say that in the theistic history, this is the most momentous occasion when for the first time orthodox Indian thought and practice has penetrated the West and taken root. Fortunately, there's a cultural gap. Although America is a very powerful country, the people are rather isolated from the rest of the world. Surprising how little they know about other cultures. They construct international hotels that are exactly the same inside. They go around the world and just stay in the hotels. It's like going under the water through these glass submarines. You look and see the fish. They just come out and look around and see that, go and buy in a market and buy a few souvenirs and come back. So when they see things that they're not accustomed to, they have a tendency of withdrawing, of rejecting, rather than understanding that there's something more than what they know. So that way the Vedanta Sutras advise that human beings should actually start to inquire about the cause of everything, about the underlying permanent reality, and go beyond all the temporary forms. Atata brahma jigyasa. Now is the time to inquire about Brahma. Now is the time to inquire about the absolute truth in this human form of life. Actually, that inquiry was practically non-existent. Thanks to Srila Prabhupada, now many souls are inquiring and they're able to get the answers. That's why we pray, Umagyana Timanindasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshush Unmilitang Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. That the torchlight of knowledge is being carried by the spiritual master, and with that torchlight, the eyes shut, covered by ignorance, are forced open. So, this is the situation. This Krishna conscious movement is actually meant to open the eyes of the people, to bring them closer to Krishna. Jai chita mang prapadjante tang sataiva bhajamyaham. Krishna says, as one approaches me, I will reciprocate. So somehow or another, if people are even inquisitive, even if they're slightly interested, well, Krishna reciprocates. But if they're completely indifferent, then of course, that's not a very positive way to get reciprocation. Then if Krishna is indifferent, one is in a hopeless state. Even Lord Jesus said that in terms of opposition, He said, we don't mind opposition. In fact, we prefer someone is against us or for us. He said, I like hot water or cold water, but if it's lukewarm, I spit it out. See, if people come up, why you guys are doing all this stuff? Well, that's better than someone who just looks the other way, as if you don't exist. I didn't see Hare Krishna there. Because those people, they're just trying to have their blinders on, like in the horse races. They don't want to see and just going ahead. Put the blinder, then you put a blinder on the horse so that it doesn't get frightened from what it sees on the side. Like that, they're putting on themselves blinders. They don't want to be disturbed. They just want to go plodding along. They don't realize. Padang, padang, yaddi, padang, nateshan. Every step is filled with danger. Every step is filled with danger in this world. No one can avoid it. Even for the devotees, there is danger at every step. But because they take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, He crosses them over the dangers. Samasrita ye pada pallava plavam mahat padang punya yaso marare bhavang buddhi vasa padanga 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 padang yati padang natesham. Murari's, Krishna's lotus feet are compared to the boat which can carry us over the ocean of birth and death. And those who don't accept And those who are wise souls, they always accept that vote, knowing that outside of that shelter, every step is filled with danger. So when we first come to Krishna consciousness and start to serve, naturally we're not always thinking of Krishna at every moment. Still, whatever service we do brings us closer and closer to Krishna. Even if we don't finish in this life, again in the next life we'll take up where we left off. So at the same time, Srila Prabhupada, he would repeatedly warn his devotees that they had to keep their contact with Krishna by being conscious of Krishna, by being conscious through chanting, through remembering, through being sensitive to Krishna's dictation in one's heart. See, Krishna helps even the materialist. Just like when a mosquito is about to home in, first the mosquito does a pass by the ear. This is super soul giving you a chance. Uh-oh, the mosquito's there. Then, I think I mentioned before that the tigers, wherever they go, there's a small rodent that follows them. A little guinea pig, and it makes this noise. Just about when the tiger's about to strike on the deer. In this way, the deer can flee and be saved if it's conscious. But if we don't listen to the super soul, just like when you're flying in a plane, if you turn off your radio, you're not going to hear the news broadcast. You're not going to listen. You're not going to hear anything. So devotee, actually Krishna helps from within. He helps without as guru, and he helps from within as Chaitya Guru. But if we don't listen, if we're not tuned, and we become careless, then it's just every chance for us to experience various difficulties. Sometimes people who want to be Krishna conscious but just never get the determination together, they think that, well, Krishna conscious movement could do so much more if they had money. So let me do something illegal and make a lot of money and give it to the Krishna conscious movement and keep a little for myself. And then this way, this will somehow be very nice. So, but when they do that, Krishna doesn't want one to do illegal activities and take unnecessary risks. And even then, so many good opportunities are there to avoid difficulty, but due to lust, a person cannot hear when the Supreme Lord is saying, don't do this, don't do that, don't do this. And in any way, he goes ahead and does it. So that's why also guru is needed. In spite of not hearing, we even know in our heart of heart that we shouldn't do this or we should do that. But our mind is so strong, our desires are so strong, anyway we want to go ahead and do it. So then we ask the guru, should we do this? He says no. Or yes. Or in this way. Or whatever. So then we take that. We know in our heart that what he's saying is correct. In a way, we shouldn't be stubborn. We should be receptive to the advice of spiritual master, advice of senior Vaishnavas. That way the people in the Western world are unprotected. They have no guide. They have no one to help them. Government hires social workers to guide people who are in trouble. You see, Vedic culture has brahmanas, has spiritual masters, who are actually advanced spiritually, and they are helping the people. Yet, the government or the people say, well, you are parasites. Yet, they're hiring people to be government-sponsored psychiatrists, sociologists, so on and so forth. And they have the highest rate, according to some recent studies, of suicide. Those people who are supposed to help the frustrated people are so frustrated themselves that they commit suicide. More than in the national average and other people. So what right or quality they have to guide others. They're just trying to prop up the status quo, taking that as correct and giving people different excuses why they can live with themselves. As they start to get closer and closer to realize how futile and how empty and how hollow the whole thing is, naturally get frustrated. So they start to prescribe for themselves the same medicines that they prescribe to the people that they're supposed to be helping. Gradually they go off and off. So actually the Vedic society is perfect. The people are supposed to help other people. Themselves have to be peaceful. They have to be situated on the transcendental platform. Mukti bhakti siddhi kami sakali ashanto Krishna bhakta niskam atoiv shanto Narayana parayana siddhanam api muktanam Narayana parayana sudullavam prasantatma kotisapya mahamune. The devotees, even amongst liberated souls and souls possessing mystic powers, are considered to be most rare and most peaceful, self-satisfied of all. This is confirmed in all of the Vedas. Therefore, they are actually in a position of helping everyone. Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, described by the song by Srinivas, they were so much loved by even the ruffians as well as the gentle people. They would come to them both for advice. This is the nature of great and pure devotees, that they're equal to everyone. Therefore, even today in India, generally the dacoits, the thieves, they'll leave alone the sadhus. One time, there was a move to assassinate Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, not by any thieves or rogues, but because he was reforming Krishna consciousness, or reforming the Vedic culture to establish Krishna consciousness, and he was exposing the misbehavior and cheating of other so-called spiritual leaders. So these so-called spiritual leaders were trying to find someone who would assassinate Bhakti Siddhanta. So when one day the police chief came over to see Bhakti Siddhanta and said that you should be very careful, there's an attempt being made to take your life. And I was offered 25 or 10,000, I mean 10,000 rupees or 25,000 rupees, which of course in those days would be about equivalent to maybe a quarter of a million. Prabhupada said that for 2 rupees his father would buy food for the whole year. So this police chief said, of course, as policemen, we are habituated to killing people, and for a good price like that, we don't mind doing it. But I told them that I won't get my hands dirtied with a sadhu. I can't take that much sin. It's not worth the money. But you should be careful. Actually, in India, they say that whenever the police come around, the crime increases. If there's no police station, there's usually less crime. I don't know. It's the same way in the West. The ruffians, even he was a ruffian, even he was notorious kind of policeman. Well, he didn't want to raise a hand against Bhakti Siddhanta. Actually, he could never find anyone in India. Because all the even ruffian or the gentle people, they all had great love and faith for the devotees. So this is what Srila Prabhupada wanted that should happen in the West. that people would respect the Hare Krishna devotees as being very honest, being very trustworthy, straightforward in their dealings. Of course, here in New Orleans, the construction crew seems to have established that type of rapport with certain people. Unfortunately, in general, in different parts of the country, not everyone has that idea. Of course, there's a lot of misrepresentation. But that was Prabhupada's idea. Because actually, a devotee has no reason to cheat anyone. There's nothing to gain. Working for Krishna, Krishna provides everything. A devotee is sincerely interested to help everyone come closer to Krishna, to help everyone develop faith in Krishna. Ado sraddha. First one has to have faith, then one can go up to the level of association with devotees, practicing devotional service. So our first duty is to establish faith. If we can establish faith in people, rather people can, you know, we can establish or help people to get, for them to establish faith in Krishna, then it's very easy for them to make further and further progress. As we serve Krishna, then we become happier and happier. Actually, in Srivas's house, there was one maidservant whose name was Dukhi Devi. Dukhi means miserable. Dukhi Dasi. She was called unhappy or miserable Dasi. It's an unusual name, but for various reasons she was given that name. But when Lord Chaitanya started his Sankirtan, she used to carry from the Ganges earthen pots filled with water, with Ganges water, and line them up. Well, she could have just put them in the house. She was supposed to bring water. She's a maidservant. So she was bringing water. Those days they didn't have the municipal utilities. If you wanted to get water, you walk down to the river and bring it yourself. So she was bringing water. But not only did she bring the water, but she would line it up around where Lord Chaitanya was going to. She had to bring 108 or some incredible amount of water pots. But then she actually, rather than just plop them off in one place, spontaneously she would line them up, just as like, almost as if it was a greeting for Lord Chaitanya's kirtan party. Line them up in a beautiful row. And full water pots are considered to be very auspicious. So Lord Chaitanya was noticing every day how when she brought the water pots, that she would place them near the Sankirtan place in beautiful lines and circles, and just, you know, like that he knew that she was doing this, especially thinking that this may be pleasing to Lord Chaitanya. So because she was doing this humble service, but in a devotional spirit, Lord Chaitanya immediately recognized her. He said, "What is this maidservant's name?" They said, "Her name is Dukhi Dasi." He said, "What? How can she be Miss Miserable? That is not a proper name. Because she is doing all this devotional service, her attitude of service is so nice. No one with that type of devotional spirit can be called Dukhi or miserable, unhappy. From now on, I want everyone to call her Sukhi Dasi. They should call her, you see, Miss Happiness. Not Miss Miserable." And by the blessing of Lord Chaitanya, Dukhi Dasi became Sukhi Dasi. Unhappy became happy. So even the paid servant of the devotees of Lord Chaitanya, because of his little service, a little association, they got that unlimited mercy. This is Lord Chaitanya's movement special characteristic. Anyone who has contact gets mercy. That doesn't mean that when someone is in the movement and someone is coming forward, you shouldn't take Lord Chaitanya's mercy for granted. One shouldn't become self-conceitful that I'm a devotee to the extent that even super soul in us tells us, be careful, don't do it. It's not what your guru wants, it's not what you should do, it's not what I want. From within, Krishna's voice is telling us, and we, no, I'm a devotee, I know best, we're thinking it's our mind or something, we don't listen. We just start to think of ourselves in a false ego, I'm a devotee. We should be thinking always that we're trying to be a devotee, we're trying to come up to that standard. And thus we should always be tuned in to Krishna. Well, in the beginning our tuning will not be very good. Therefore, we must have a spiritual master. But even as our daily activities, we learn more and more what Krishna wants of us, how to act. Still, devotional service is an unlimited field for progress. Therefore, the spiritual master all along has much advice and much assistance to offer. Even in the shiksha, the prayers to the spiritual master by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he describes that when one is liberated and goes back to Godhead in the spiritual sky, there the spiritual master comes as an older friend and introduces one into the pastimes of Krishna. So even in liberated state, in the conditioned state, we respect the Guru with awe and reverence. In a liberated state, then there's some friendship is also there. Friendship is there only with reverence in the conditional life, never familiarity. So of course, now we are a bit anxious because one of our devotees has had an accident. So naturally we are praying that Krishna, in this life, we can have continued association. We need so many preachers. He could do so many works through her that we are, of course, hopeful for. But ultimately, Krishna is completely independent. And if he wants to take someone away, there's nothing that we can do. We have to go sooner or later. Then we only can pray that a person will remain by Krishna's mercy, either go back to Godhead or remain somewhere in service. But of course, the fact of the matter, apart from those higher considerations, which are, of course, constantly dwelling in our mind, there's practical considerations for us to make in our own life. Then in things like this, there are definitely times when we go ahead headstrong and we just start ignoring this little reminders that Krishna is giving us. Just that even our daily activity, voice tells us when they don't do it. Still we do it. We know that if we're driving and if we get sleepy, that if we don't pull over and sleep, we're going to have an accident. But we don't listen. We know that at different times we get the warning from Krishna, but we are not tuned in. Of course, that way association with devotees is recommended, because even if we're not tuned in, if a devotee is a real friend, without any envy, without any anger, without any, of course, anger might be there just in consideration, but without any enmity. The devotee says, why are you wasting your time, or why are you taking unnecessary risk, or why are you doing this unauthorized thing? They help us. They remind us of Krishna. When we're alone, we're that much more vulnerable. Prabhupada, he came to the West alone, but he admitted that I didn't think that anyone else could have done it. But once he had devotees, one time he had to go to the bank or something, there was some mess up in the bank, he had to personally go to straighten it out. He said, I want to go with a devotee. He said, I never want to go anywhere alone again. I never want to be out of the association of devotees again. Never allow me to be alone. See, even though he's a fully liberated soul, didn't want to be out of the association of devotees. In the same way, we should be very careful. We were discussing last night not to ever allow our mind to think of an alternative where we're living outside of association of devotees. And if we're living outside of association of devotees now, we should see that our situation is risky. It'll be very hard to make advancement in Krishna consciousness. As much as possible, we should stay close in the circle of devotees. That's called satsanga. Pious isn't a good enough word. It's transcendental association. Association of the saints. We need that association. Devotees are real friends in the world. So we should feel very fortunate to be in the association of devotees, and we should be very careful not to lose that association. Because devotees are devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they automatically have all good qualities within them. Just like the Goddess of Fortune saw, well, there are some people apparently have all good qualities, but because they're not devotees, she rejected. No. Just like Kamsa, he had all good qualities. He was very intelligent, very charitable, very powerful, very expert at managing and at controlling situations. But as soon as there was a voice from the heavens that said, Kamsa, your sister Devaki's eighth son will be the cause of your death. She said, what? He grabbed his sister by the hair in front of hundreds of people, his parents, relatives, and said, your son will be my death. I'm going to kill you now. Just ready to cut off her head. Because he wasn't a devotee. Oh, so you're going to be the cause of my death? Well, I'll kill you. This is the demoniac idea. Immediately, all good qualities out the window. All thrown out. Forgotten. Because the sense gratification, the self-interest was run over, forget everything. Pariksit Maharaj, when he was cursed, you're going to die in 7 days. He didn't try to, I'll get that little Brahmin punk. No, it wasn't any attitude like that. He said, this is Krishna's will on me. I acted irresponsibly, now I'm put in difficulty, now how can I think of Krishna? He must want me to fix my mind on him. He has some higher purpose. After completing his purpose, of course then, he was free to do whatever he wanted. No one can stop the coming of time. But we try to play in the hands of Krishna's higher purpose and become instruments for Krishna. This is our special opportunity. In this Krishna conscious movement that Lord Chaitanya predicted, every town and village will be filled with the chanting of his holy name. Now if we act as instruments, if we allow his mercy to flow through us, then we'll be glorified. We'll be benefited so much. And that benefit will accrue to countless souls. So just like the Goddess of Fortune, she didn't want to be engaged in the service of any inferior person. She only chose, let me just serve Vishnu. In the same way, we should follow in her footsteps, and why should we serve others when we can serve the Supreme? And by serving Him, definitely, not only will we be benefited, but countless others. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare. Are there any questions? Yes?
What's the practice?
In the beginning, the only way to be 100% sure is by asking the spiritual master. One can check with other devotees, senior devotees, especially the spiritual master. Then one can be fully sure. Just like we would sometimes get an idea, we'd ask Srila Prabhupada, and he would say, that idea was inspired by Super Soul. Sometimes someone would give an idea, he'd say, that idea is inspired by Maya. Of course, by hearing, by reading, we have to, when we get an idea, we have to learn to analyze it. That, just like we pray, Guru, Bhakko, Paddo, Chitta, Koriyo, Akko, how's it called? Chitta, Koriyo, Akko. May the consciousness be made one with your instructions, with your orders. Whatever the word of the spiritual master is, our consciousness, we want that to be filled with those words and to be one with, in harmony with those words. So we do something or we have an idea, we want to have it confirmed. This is the system of parampara. Whatever a person does it only if it's authorized. Directly can see that Guru has said, Krishna has said in the Shastra. And the Shastras are so vast, the Vedas, that one doesn't have to leave anything for speculation. Even if one knows in his heart that this is Krishna conscious. Also, can trace out the effort. Immediately also Krishna gives the example. There's this example in the Vedas of this devotee or this situation. There's so many millions of examples that have been given in these, even in the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita, that most of all the situations have already been covered. If one has the eyes to see, so the spiritual master has the eyes to see, therefore we take his advice. There are also symptoms that over-endeavor is usually a symptom of a Maya idea. Just like a person gets an idea to do something for Krishna, and it happens very easily, or it seems to just be going on. But when you have an idea, well, let me do this for Krishna, but a number of steps of the material activities one has to do before it finally gets around to being something which is directed at Krishna, are so many and so wrought with difficulties that it's a symptom of an over-endeavor. An over-endeavor for an unproportionate result. If one has to do something, it's to over-endeavor. They might be attached to, let me do this for Krishna. I want to build a house for Krishna. Whatever, just something. It's very hard to say any particular thing. Maybe one wants to make an airplane. The same thing might be Krishna conscious in another situation, so it's not the particular thing, but in that particular situation, there were other easier ways of using time. Krishna preferred you do it in a different way. So that particular way, Maya keeps giving so many obstacles, so that one will take the other way. But one is so fixed on that particular idea due to some kind of preconceived idea that in spite of every obstacle, they go on trying. And so at every step they meet difficulty. A lot of practical examples I can think of. They always involve devotees. I don't want to embarrass them. There was one older devotee in our movement who was doing nice service, but then he got an idea, someone gave him some rubies, and he got into a whole thing that he started mining rubies. He bought a ruby mine, and he started going there. He just became overwhelmed by these rubies and jewels, like kind of a gold fever. He got a ruby fever, a gem fever. And Prabhupada kept telling him that it's an over-endeavor, it's unnecessary, just preach Krishna consciousness, Krishna will provide this, that. He said, no, I want to make money for Krishna. And even his guru told him, don't do it. He said, no, I don't. And so, of course, whatever money he did make didn't go to Krishna. He just reinvested it in his business again and again, what usually happens. And then, finally, he just became further and further and removed from Krishna and more in Maya. Now he's, you know, for the past many years, he's completely out of touch. You see him sometimes. Still going to make it one day. So, it's like over-endeavors, misdirected. So, of course, ultimately, the guru is the custodian of one's spiritual progress. You have to take his advice. And as one advances more and more, then one can tell when one makes a wrong decision. Krishna usually smashes it. As you become more advanced in devotional service, the slightest mistake will create an immediate result. See, karma may take 100 births, but when you surrender to Krishna, you make a mistake, you may get the reaction in 5 seconds or 5 minutes or 5 hours. There was a devotee riding in a taxi cab in Calcutta who started to criticize Srila Prabhupada for and different devotees for God knows what reason. Must have gone mad or something. And another devotee who was with him immediately stopped the car and got out and said, I'm not going to hear any offense at pure devotees. And that person went on and within 1 hour went to the railway station, missed the train, got in a fight with one of the coolies there, one of the porters. They call them coolies in India. That's the official name. Hey, coolie. They don't mind being called coolies. So then there was a whole riot, and about 150 of the coolies came out of the walls with bricks and sticks, and they stripped the devotee, the so-called, you know, devotee, completely down. Naked. All he had on was a Brahmin thread. And they beat the pulp out of him and he was running down the street naked. Finally jumped in a moving bus, you know, the whole bus emptied out. They couldn't believe it. And this all happened within, you know, like 1 or 2 hours after he blasphemed the devotee. He was in the hospital. He's a blooped devotee, wasn't it? That was criticizing all his others. After that, he came by and bowed down hundreds of times in the temple and personally went to each devotee begging for forgiveness. So that way he was able to learn. Sometimes we are repeatedly told to be cautious in a particular way or to avoid some kind of activity. We don't listen, we don't listen, we don't listen. Then finally, Krishna says, well, let what be happen. The Maya takes over. Krishna lifts up. He doesn't personally do it. He just lifts up some of the shelter and lets Maya move in. Otherwise, the devotee is always under the Yoga Maya shelter. But if we neglect Krishna, we neglect the Guru, or we blaspheme, then that shelter is removed, and then we're at the mercy of Maya. She's already upset that we tried to get out of her clutches, so she puts a full load on us. Yeah.
Someone blasts pure devotee or it's a fierce master, then even though the Bhagavad Gita says that a devotee will attain birth in heaven, planets, or night, material birth, this person will take birth in another life or related lifetime for blasting a spiritual master, or is he also come under the Bhagavad Gita?
No, the point is, say a devotee tries to become Krishna conscious and doesn't make it. Senses take him off, enters into material life again. But whatever time a person spent in doing Krishna conscious activities, for that they get heavenly planets or they get a very good birth in the future. They don't lose anything. You see, the sinful reaction doesn't affect. The sinful life delays your going back to Godhead, but doesn't stop it. Because your credit is in like a fixed account. But what happens is when you do offenses, this is a whole different thing. offenses are directly, it's just like you're working for someone, you build up a good credit, this, that, then you steal from him. Then you get fired, that person never wants to see you again. Right? But say that, you know, you work for a person, just somehow you go away, you quit. Then whatever you do, but with him, your relationship is, you know, the same. I mean, just in a real gross kind of material example, it's not fully appropriate. In a higher sense, our relationship with Krishna is independent of all the other activities. But an offense against him or his devotee directly, you see, even he can forgive an offense against him. But when you offend his devotee who is just trying to help people to come to him, that becomes intolerable. He has a policy that he doesn't personally forgive anyone for that. If the devotee themselves forgive, then he considers pardon. So of all the offenses, the blaspheming of one's spiritual master, who is a pure devotee of Krishna, and is considered to be the worst. So the Chaitanya Charitamrita says that it takes millions of births before one ever gets a chance to have a guru again. Why Krishna will bring you up to a guru if you're going to blaspheme? So you're so envious, and then they get put in envious species of life. So that way, Srila Prabhupada said, it's much better to fall down from Krishna consciousness and just fall into sinful or materialistic activities than to become a blasphemer. Shouldn't ever resent the guru. If you couldn't make it, why resent the guru? It's not his fault. You couldn't make it. You tried, you got as far as you could, or you had that much determination, you lost faith, or you lost. So why resent the guru? The guru didn't do any harm to you. The guru was trying to help you. You go to a doctor, you have an incurable disease, or you're hooked on some kind of habit drug. The doctor tries to help you to break your habit, but you can't take the withdrawal pain, so you just go back in and then you continue taking heroin or something until you OD and die. Why blaspheme the doctor? It's not his fault. But you didn't have the determination or the patience to get out. He was going to help you through the whole thing, through your shakes and your problems and everything, just to bring you up to the point where you could be a healthy person. It's like that kind of a thing. It's when they come, they don't want to go through the withdrawals of their mind agitating them. I'll have to give up my bicycle or something, whatever, you know, different attachments. If I become a devotee, my hi-fi stereo, it will listen to all the rock and roll music I wanted to. Whatever, some different mayas may attract a person. So then, that's unfortunate, but they should see that the guru is just helping them. Yeah.
Do you lose the advances you make? Since you never lose it?
You can lose it.
You can lose it if you blaspheme.
Oh, yeah. Lord Chaitanya said that Vaishnava Puradam Atal Hati Upare Bachindi Dhar Suki Jaya Pata, that the offense of blaspheming a devotee is called mad elephant offense, because one's spiritual progress is compared to a creeper, a plant. So when you blaspheme pure devotees, the mad elephant can go into a garden, uproot the whole plant, tear it apart, you can just demolish a garden. So the comparison given that all the other things are like weeds, they don't actually kill the original plant, they just compete with it. They stun its growth by taking away the energy, this stays at whatever level it is. But it's very hard for the weeds to all completely smother out the original plant unless it just completely overcomes the thing. But the offenses, those are considered like wild elephants that come in and just rip out the thing and put it down the ground, stomp on it. And then even for a while it may seem that the person is spiritually situated. They pull out a plant and still the leaves stay green for a few days. But then gradually they dry and fall off. Your relationship with the guru is never cut. Even you fall down, it's not cut just by material activities. But if you blaspheme the guru, then it's cut. It's like disowning. The disciple disowns his guru by blasphemy.
Takes us back.
Of course. Oh yeah, that's no problem. And if the son, you know, starts to beat up the mother and the other brother so that the father says, get the hell out of here, you can't come back. But if he comes back and praise the Father, I made him, I was a fool, I was indiscreet, I'll just do whatever you say, then Father never, you know, Father always willing to take back the son. It's like that. But there's other children also to consider. If the one son starts just to, you know, like, you know, there was one that kept killing his sisters or something in the newspaper. So naturally, Father loves all the children. One's creating a big problem, they have to get out. If they want to come back, it's no problem. That's the whole thing. That in this life, if someone has done that type of thing, he should come back and he should make up for it. His situation is very dangerous. If he doesn't make up for it within this life, he's finished.
Pretty technical, but then when he comes back, after he lasts and he lost all of the parents, he can start over again. He can regain his parents to be the biggest of the name. I know devotees that are here, not that in New Orleans, that are after lasting, and they can come back.
Well, you know, these are, Krishna is keeping the score. Every individual's got their own scorecard. It's very hard to say exactly at what point what your score is. So we've seen that devotees who blaspheme, they have reinstated themselves in devotional service. But they don't start off right from where they left, it's a fact. They're a little bit at a disadvantage. But then, by the sincere working, they again quickly make up ground. Big, big devotees in our movement, some have come back even after very bad offenses. And by Prabhupada's mercy, they had some troubles. It's definitely, they have to take a humble position. That way, Prabhupada would usually engage those kind of people who got in offenses and heavy preaching work. Type of risk preaching, frontier areas or some heavy situation. I had to do a lot of preaching. Because by preaching, one can be forgiven from offenses. When you're helping others, so then, that way one gets quickly built up again, the devotional. It's like Jagai Madai. Madai was told to do some service to other people, to their spiritual life, and that way he was reinstated. Hare Krishna. Do you have any question, Dave? You had a question? How can it have exactly the same effect? Well, then we're chanting Krishna's name, but we're not chanting the Maha Mantra. If you chant any name of Krishna, that will have effect. But especially powerful is the Maha Mantra, 16 words, 32 syllables. So when you leave out a few syllables and names, then you're chanting a different mantra. You're chanting a 14-word, 30-syllable or 28-syllable mantra or something else. So, that will reduce some of the effectiveness. But, of course, because Krishna's name is Krishna, it's very hard to put all that into equations. What percent will be reduced or so on and so forth. But one should try to say the mantra as it's given. If one is inattentive while chanting, they can't help but affect. Dave? You listen to the spiritual masters, how they say it, that's the way you should try to say it. Yes?
I was wondering, it seems like in the material world, there's so many controlling agents, like the multi-material nature, the many gods, and the super soul and all that. It's hard for you to recognize how we have any free will to even choose the service of the world, or is it just the Lord's person entirely that, you know, inspires us to take up service?
One devotee just yesterday was talking with him or her, I forget, and they brought it up in a very nice way, that once, that all along they were putting off being a devotee or surrendering to Krishna, and at the one point when they finally decided that, well, if I don't just one time surrender to Krishna, I'll never know what I missed. Let's surrender. Just made that decision that I'm going to try to surrender. I'm going to be a devotee of Krishna. As soon as that decision was made, then everything, all the doors opened. That way. It's like if a devotee makes a decision that I want to just enjoy material life. I don't want anything with devotional service. Then Krishna, then Maya opens all the doors. out of nowhere the old girlfriend comes, or this one comes, or whatever. You know, all the different arrangements, they happen. And when one makes a decision that they want to be a devotee, that's a decision has to be made. These are the main two decisions. After that, then the demigods and the three modes, they offer, you know, the various alternatives for enjoying material life. And then Krishna, he offers the way for performing devotional service through his different devotees. But the basic decision that is the real decision, do I want to, is my goal in life to enjoy, all out enjoy material nature? Or is it to all out serve Krishna? And when we're in between there, kind of, that's the point where we get buffed around. We don't really, we kind of just innocent. That time, sometimes we try to enjoy, sometimes we think, well, maybe I'll be, when we're in that kind of undecided state, of course, that's a very distressful state. A person that's completely just sold out to ignorance, they're at that point, they're pretty happy until they get completely smashed again, then they start to again become undecided. But a person completely just in ignorance just decided, I just want to enjoy the senses, I don't want to hear anything else, I don't want to think of anything else. For that, for some short amount of time, they'll, even their difficulties happen, they'll be able to remain ignorant of it for some time. But the devotee, a rather undecided person, he has to decide whether, which way he wants to go. So once you decide, then Krishna helps you, gives you intelligence to remember him or to forget him. So there's no karma that you can, should be a devotee by this karma. You've done this activity, so now you should be a devotee. You can come right up to the water, but the choice to drink or not is up. In other words, by so many pious activities, so many good activities in previous life and this and that, one will be brought right up to the gateway. But at that point, then if one's, well, no, not yet, not now, this, that, something, excuse. Then how long it again will take to accrue that much pious activity to again be given that opportunity? No one can say. So, in the human form of life, we're given occasionally that opportunity. Human form of life itself, the human birth itself is that opportunity. But even within human life, it's not everyone has the equal chance of really getting up to that choice. Many people never come up to that choice, most of the people. So when someone actually comes to the point where that choice is an alternative that has even entered their mind, that means already that person is very, very rare. Out of thousands and thousands, he's or she's a very unique person. But then if they don't take the risk, to them it might be a risk, or don't take the faith or the courage. There's no risk involved, really. If they don't take that decision, then Krishna, then they can't go any further there. They just kind of either stay there for one birth or for one period of time. If they perform a little devotional service, then they may be able to just maintain even for many births at that level. As long as they don't commit offenses, as long as they're doing a little devotional service, then they kind of just stay at the same level. Until finally they either decide that, yes, I want to surrender to Krishna. And then from there one kind of steps over the threshold and goes into actual spiritual life. Or till one just all changes and decides that want to just enter into material sense gratification. Or worse yet, just offends a devotee. See, other devotees are entering through the door, going by, just standing there trying to, well, should I go in or not? What should I do? Should I surrender to Krishna or not? And then so as the people start going by, sometimes they get envious. That envy is a dangerous thing, as we were discussing. Without the envy, you can just be standing at the door for a long time, thinking about it. But as soon as the offenses come, then one is forced down. So the thing is, when we're at that stage, we should take the decision. What do we have to lose? We've tried so many things. To the materialist, it doesn't seem like much different. Doesn't seem like, well, I've done so many things, what if I just try sincerely for 2 months to do everything that a devotee is supposed to do and see what happens? And if one just makes even that decision, that I'll fully surrender, and if in 2 months I find that nothing happened from it, then I'll do something else. People, once you make the decision, all right, I'll surrender. Even on a short-term basis, you know, that if I don't get any results within a certain time, but my mood is I'm going to surrender all out, see what happens. Just make that decision, then you see how things happen. Krishna just makes the arrangements. These one right up, one meets a spiritual master, one meets devotees, step by step, different arrangements are there for one to advance. Was that your question? I think there was another thing. I think I feel I'm missing one part of it.
Yeah. Well, it seems to me that maybe it might be possible that your karma can prevent you from deciding in favor of.
That's a fact. Once karma can make it difficult for one to decide, if one is very much in the modes of ignorance and passion, then it's harder for the mind to come up to the concept of pure goodness, of surrendering to God. So that way karma can stand in your way to a certain extent. It makes it a little more difficult, but then that's why the spiritual master, when a person somehow or another gets close, even though there may be difficulties with karma, maybe a person comes because of karma, even they come for a couple of years. But just somehow, even though they see the devotees, they see what's going on, they like it, but somehow, because their desires are still so strong, they're being influenced so much by the modes, that really the idea, well, I like to associate with them, I like to be with them, but to be one of them or to you know, actually surrender, that resolute determination doesn't come. But that's where the pure devotees, those who are spiritual masters, who are empowered, they pray to Krishna. When they see someone in that type of situation, that please have your mercy on this person. Or they, through different attempts, they try to just help the person get over that karma. That karma is not an absolute obstacle. It's just like a dead weight or something. It's a pull. So therefore, one needs sometimes a little extra mercy. Sometimes a person can see that just like coming up for breaths of air, you can see, just like get over the clouds, you can see the clear expanse that I'm just being tied down by so many karmas, by so many desires. And you just get a little glimpse. At that time, if you just cry out help to spiritual master, to Nitai Gaur, help. Please help me. I need special help. I'm entangled. I'm not strong enough to surrender yet, but I need your help. When a little bit of sense comes, then the Lord doesn't refuse anyone's call like that. So that way Lord Chaitanya, the special part of their movement is that their special characteristic is they help people who are entangled like that in karmas. People who are very elevated, who have been able to, who are on top of the mountain of karma, so to speak, they're in goodness situation, but who are still proud. They think that, well, because I'm riding on the wave right now, I don't need anyone, Krishna, like, he owes me something. Those people, Lord Chaitanya doesn't care for much, neglects them. But those who are wanting to get that mercy, but even though they're entangled in so many results of karma, they may not be very rich, or they may not be very learned, or they just may not be very fortunate. But somehow or another, whatever may be their situation, fortunate, unfortunate, they just, sometime or another, just cry out, please help me. Please help me to surrender to you. Then he lifts them up. Sometimes one doesn't even have the guts or whatever just to even cry out to please help me. And sometimes, just out of their own, a devotee sees that, well, this person could be a nice devotee. Krishna, please help him. That way, just by the mercy of a spiritual man, just by coming and doing a little service, then one gets the mercy. Yes? Oh, that anyone didn't have to ask any question? Let's get there.
What's the distinction between, say, religious fanatic and somebody who's one of the advices for how we should advance in Krishna consciousness, we're told that we should avoid niyam agraha. Niyam means the rules of the scriptures. Agraha, it says particularly a way in Sanskrit that when you combine two words, then niyam agraha could mean niyam agraha or agraha. So niyam agraha means to be very enthusiastic for the rules. Overly enthusiastic. And agraha means to neglect the rules. Graha means to accept. And agraha means to neglect. So, someone who neglects the rules just avoids, you know, I don't care for it. That's one aspect. We're discussing someone who's a fanatic. But that means that he's overly attached to the rule without seeing what is the underlying purpose. Sometimes there are various rules, and each rule has its relative importance under different situations. So a person may just stick to one particular set of rules and just very expertly do those rules. At the same time, they're not at all becoming purified. They're not actually getting any closer to God. They're just fanatically doing the rules. Even it's sometimes even offensive to God because of other consideration that they're just willingly, willfully just neglecting. There's always higher principles of mercy, of respecting great devotees, of so many different principles. Just like one time Prabhupada went to a businessman's house and who had invited him to come there, but then the person sent out a message that I'm busy doing my puja. I can't come and receive you right now. Wait. So he made Prabhupada wait an hour while he finished his puja. Prabhupada said that this person is a neophyte, doesn't know. The spiritual master comes, you're supposed to receive him. Especially. Then there was another person who was doing his puja. As soon as he saw Prabhupada came, dropped everything, came out. Prabhupada said, you didn't finish your puja. He said, more important than worshipping Krishna is worshipping his devotees. So that person is like a contrast. That person knew what was supposed to be done. Well, the other person was just like fanatically doing, you know. He doesn't know that he's making so many offenses throughout his day that the only way he can actually advance is by the mercy of some devotees. Instead, he's so proud that I'm just doing my thing, I'm already, and then he go out and I've done my puja, oh yeah, oh yes, no, thank you for coming. So those people are far removed.